out. And the lung, compared very basically to the table of contents, the lungs are made up of just millions and millions of those layers like this that we call alveoli, or air sacs. And in this situation, they are known as the pneumon. You know your body is composed of the pneumon type of components. The pneumon pertains to the spirit. And Dr. Kennedy told you in reference to this diagram of the air that Jesus arose from the grave, that many of the dead arose and went on into Jerusalem with them. And that is carriers of the spirit there, the compact that make up the lungs in that situation. And you know, the compact were pressed into the sides of the interior of the temple and covered over with gold. And they stand in the holy place. At this time, we move right on and bring before you our speaker, Dr. Kennedy, who moves on to talk further on the subject of the salvation of the city.
Thank you, Dr. Kennedy. And to say that I really enjoy being with Dr. Harris and also by Dr. Gross. Now, the things that they say are very deep. And it makes me sometimes think like this. It isn't no wonder that so many come and go. Because of the fact that they haven't been taught any of the things that we talk about much. And consequently, we are helping to be more depth of the things in the school than you are in churches where they go. They don't go into none of these days, which we go into. So, consequently, the things that are said here, sitting on these hard chairs and all, get restless. Because the room, you don't, people don't know anything about what we're talking about. All that Dr. Gross said and all that Dr. Harris said was speaking in tongues. We wasn't talking about the mind, we talking about the time. Then the subject of the salvation of Israel, and we want to never say nothing about them. And yet they were on the surface. I'm just talking about how the other fellow would look at it. I just think that none of that had nothing to do with the subject. As I remember years ago, possibility started out with the girls was praying at that. Had a church there, and it was some 3 or 4 years after we had started in school. This was called a Triumph Church of the New Age, and we had the minister there from the Church of God and then the Triumph Church of the New Age. Greg Wheeler was a pastor at that time, Greg Wheeler. And so the subject come up about the questions they were asking. I was had the shot on me, and so the man, the preacher from over at the Church of God asked me a question, and I went back to Adam to explain his question, and as I was explaining, he sort of became they stay on the subject. And a man that was sitting there that was with the church She looked around and she said, "Well, that's what he's talking about." So I said that to say this, that in a group of people that haven't had any more training in the reality of God, why, all of us talk off of the subject. We are never on it. See, because the kind of mind, and that doesn't work together. Now I'm going to show you a few things here. I've jotted this down on a piece of paper. My daughter here went down to the library and we were compiling some books and all, information from books from the Roman Catholic Church. Brother Gates and his wife bought some books, and we were making a research into Catholicism, something they knew something about. See, we can figure all around here, but they wouldn't know anything at all about it. So now, since Pope John is making an effort to do what you'd call reunite Christendom, and to get the folks back in the church. So, that has to do with our subject, the salvation of Israel. Now, if you're real wise and real smart, truthfully wise and smart, you keep your eye on that thing for this reason why. Although you have seen us get in trouble here about man, as Dr. Brooks said, about his being his own free morally and do everything according to his own will, and you've seen that grow up. But now if you look at Pharaoh, that's over in the book, ain't that in place? Pharaoh, did God harden his heart? See, and that son of perdition all the way through his heart. And he didn't only harden Pharaoh's heart, I'm ready to do that now. But he also hardened his heart too. Which we would say this way, to express in more modern language, we would say that the folks was hardened. That's the way we put it. And now that is what has happened. All over the world, the people are either listening to the inner voice of God in their hearts and stuff, kind of everybody has it. And as much so as you have a negative, you have a positive, and everybody, that small voice that sometimes when you would do something, say, that you shouldn't do, and you understand? And then, oh boy, get on to it, see? And so there you are, you see? So if you don't listen to that God part, why then, learn what it is and listen to that. Why then, you're pretty much drunk. You know what I'm talking about? So now, in this piece of paper, I've got these things down. I had them in there for quite some time. I want to show you so that you can see. Now we're talking, and Dr. has talked about it here, about the pomegranates and so forth and so on. They were in the interior of that temple. Now everybody knows a little something about Solomon's temple, where they are not. They are Jews, Catholics, or Protestants. Is that right? I'm speaking collectively, of course. They know a little something about it. And to show you unless you have some eyes of your understanding, I don't mean physical eyes in your head, then you wouldn't discern a lot of things that goes on, and it show you just how about the individual's will. Now I try to show you from time to time that all things work according to the purpose of God. That shows you. Now one day when the apostles were up in the building, up in the temple, which now the temple was torn down after it stood there 33 years. And she went up from Egypt. You might think because the children of Israel had escaped here and went out into the wilderness here, and they were under the new government, that is the Ten Commandments. And then they passed on through the River Jordan and went into Canaan's land and built Solomon's temple up there. Now Saul reigned first 40 years. David reigned 40 years. That's 80 years, see? Right? Mm-hmm. And then Solomon, during his reign, the first part of his reign, he built that temple, and it stood there 33 years, and shortly after Solomon died, then Shishak went up from Egypt and tore that temple down, plundered it, clear to the ground. Did you know that? Yep, that's what happened. So they that involved, the Egyptians even had to, they had to dedicate the temple. Tore it down. Then if the temple was rebuilt again, and then it was razed again. And the last time, which was the third time, it was 46 years that we started to build, which is called Herod's Temple. And the other one was Zerubbabel. We call it Zerubbabel because they were instrumental in seeing that the temple was put back again. But the last time, it started 16 and a half years before the birth of Christ. And when he got down to his, where he get it into his ministry, by then it had been 46 years in the building. And then 3 years in the building, 46 and 349. So then that was the last week of Daniel's prophecy. See, that the Christ dying and raising from the dead again was the building of that temple again. Well, now the boys one day, before he died, they were up there in the temple, Peter and the disciples, and so as they came outside of the temple and they looked at it, with decorated with all the precious stones. Of course, everything that was in the original temple that Solomon built was not in the last temple that carried it. The Ark of the Covenant was not there. Not there. And they hadn't finished building yet either. That matter hadn't completed, and that matter they didn't see. But what they did have of it up there was torn down. Now, when the boys was out looking at it, and they said, it certainly is a beautiful place, and all lack of that, and they was admiring the temple, and Jesus said to them, there shall not be one stone left upon top of another that shall not be thrown down. And then, that was the condition that that temple would come down. Then in Catholicism, they claim Jesus was talking to Peter in the 16th chapter of Matthew upon this rock. He said, who do men say that I am? Who do they say I am? And they answered and said that some say you're Jeremiah, but some of the other prophets have written. And so he said, with whom do you say I am? Peter answered up and said, I say that thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God, who was in Philippi and Caesarea at that time. And so he said, flesh and blood have not revealed the Son to thee, but my Father which is in heaven. And upon this rock I will build my church, and the very gates of hell shall not prevail against. All their lives committed pretty much with those words from the Christians. Isn't that right? And of course, there the Roman Catholics, they say that Peter was that rock upon which Christ built his church. You know that? And that's why they have Peter in the capacity in which they have. Now, let me show you something. Up here in Mount Moriah, where Abraham offered up Isaac, right in that spot, David put a rock there, made an altar there. And Martin, he said that that was the place where the house of the Lord, the Lord had shown him where to build that house. And then as you looked into that, and go to dig into it, if you want to, you can, they got some depth on it now, you can get you over there and hurry. You can go over that and look, and you will find that where that temple stood, there is a great big rock there. Rock forming, see, that that temple rested upon for the figures of that rock that Christ was talking about in Caesarea. See, now you wouldn't catch that one at all. Just miss it in its entirety. Now there's something else I'm going to tell you about that temple while I'm interest. And that is this. After that they had built it and it was torn down,
the third time. When Solomon dedicated, don't forget it, I told you this, that he said the heaven of heavens cannot contain it. Now this first section and third heaven, that's all he said. The heaven of heavens cannot contain it. Then prophets, those temples coming down and being put up again. In the last days of his ministry, Christ went into the temple and spoke to the carnal-minded Pharisees and the scribes that there in the temple, the biblical preachers, knowing that they were dead from the fall of Adam. Time comes for him to be crucified. Don't nobody like to be, said nothing. See what I'm talking about? Just like they don't want me to get up now and talk about the ministry, the preachers, and how dumb and ignorant we are. See what I'm talking about? And we don't know what we're talking about. They don't like me to talk like that. See? Then if I try to tell you some of the spiritual things, then they'll say, well, who do you think he is? What do you think has happened to all these people all down through the ages here? He must think he's smart, and ain't nobody got no sense but him. Now, that's the same thing that Christ did when he went up there in the temple the last time. Now, watch him get in trouble. When time come, all the rest of the time, that he was up there, he said, now, I didn't come to call the righteous to I come to seek and to save that which is lost, knowing everything was lost back there in heaven. In heaven, it's all put it all down. He was in fact till all he made it out. And he got along. Until it come time for him to be crucified. Then when it come time for him to be crucified, he went back to stand in that temple. And he told the Sanhedrin to come. He said, you hypocrite. You servant. See? You generation of blindness. See? Look back in the garden. See? You generation of blindness. How can he escape the damnation of hell? Those are his words. See, you hypocrite! See, ain't that what he said? That you won't go in yourself, and you won't let them hear it in, though. See, and you bind them with heavy birds, and you wouldn't live. Mother, it's your little thing. See? They had all kinds of traditions and things that they battled with, you see. They had the Talmud. You know what the Talmud is? You know what the Mishnah is? Their idea, their interpretation, just like your commentator, see, of the law, so forth and so on. See, and that was what they went by, see. That was their commentator or their instructions in the scripture. And he said those things. Well, now, he's fixing to get in trouble. It's time for him to die. And up there talking before them, like that, it wasn't long before they had him hanging right out there on the tree. He knew that was what he was going to do. See? But he was telling the truth. So they was all chaos from the fall of Adam. But they just didn't like the idea of being told about. See what I'm talking about? That's where the carnal mind is. Don't want to tell them about. And when he spoke his last sermon up there in the temple, he went out. And this is what he said. Behold, your house. All before that, he called it, don't you make my father's house a den of thieves when he was up there selling oxen, turtle doves, and sacrificial feasts for all. See? And overturned the tables of the money changers, put the cards and drove them out there, see? Not there, of course, the Gentiles, the outside court, see? Said, so said, now don't make my father's house again a thief. They money changed. With which I learned now in the times of my life. Reestablish that thing. Be established. But nevertheless, that's what he said to them. Behold, your house is left unto you dead. Now they didn't get that. And as the prophet spoke of it, knowing through the vision and revelation that they would not, he said, where is the house that ye build unto me? See, Solomon, even when he dedicated, called himself dedicated, he said, the temple out there, see. You understand? Now here comes the prophet saying, where is the house that he built unto me? So he continues to come down and speak into the repetition. Because in fact, there hasn't been a house, see, a physical house, in its reality that any man on earth has ever built. Anytime. They were all figures, you understand, and not the real thing. Just like when he made the promise to Abraham that in his seed, which is Christ, he would bless all the families of the earth. Now our mind is so powerful that we couldn't see that promise like that, you understand? And just like we can't see the real house that Dr. Gross is talking about. We're building up a spiritual house. Now, knowing those things, understanding those things, why then, Jesus, when the boys were standing out there adoring so much, with the carnal mind and thinking of the restoration of Israel or restoring it back to the place where it flourished in the days of Solomon and in the days of David. You see what it sounds like? He said to them, he said, now, there shall not be one stone left upon top of another that shall not be thrown down. Now you what? Because that thing goes clear on back to the greater and more perfect tabernacle and Satan operating in it, which is the universe. Now what? You know. Now, here, you know that in AD 70, pagan Rome, let's call it pagan Rome, under Titus, known to mind, went up, come up to Jerusalem with an army in AD 70. Tore that temple down, ran it completely to the ground, tore it all to pieces. See? Fulfilling the prediction of Christ. It had to come down because in his resurrection is a spiritual body. The physical had to come down. Do you see that one? Now, Dr. Harris told you the other night about the way that temple was constructed. We took this off now, and Dr. Gross got this on you. It's wet. See, we've not yet put some kind of a wall around it. But this crown on that, if you notice, it looks just like a chair there. See? Now, God raised up Solomon to sit, to build that temple. And Christ raised up to set upon the throne of his father David. And this is kind of constructed, this Jackson and Boaz here. See, it's constructed like a chair. See, the temple and the oracle and all, see. Just like the back of the chair here, see, and the king was sitting on that overlaid with gold, was pouring that crown. See? And to go in the door there, see, in the oracle and so forth and above, you see. By then, you would have the holy place in the most holy. See? Around the wall. And the inside of the most holy place were these pomegranates and so forth and so on. And those angelic faces, I can't go. Look up here, you can see one that in the figure of the night. I mean, it was really easy. You look at that, they brought their knife. It's all around the wall. Those angelic figures sitting all around the wall, those pomegranates, the dark hair, those flowers, so forth and so on. Well, you say, what's that got to do with this over here? Well, the pagan Rome tore the temple down. And then papal Rome constructed it in the back. not in Jerusalem now, but over here in Rome. In other words, it was torn down over here in Jerusalem. See? And moved over here. See, the Vatican. You see that now? Moved over there. Torn down from there. Now, down on the Isle of Patmos out here, when he was looking in his vision, he said he saw no temple there because the Lord God and the man was the temple. See? So then him carrying it down here in Jerusalem, see? Him carrying it down here in Jerusalem. And moved it over in Rome. See? They just tore down the natural, the physical, see, in Jerusalem, which was allegorical to Jerusalem above, and moved it over here in Rome. Pagan Rome tore it down. I mean, the pagan tore it down and moved it over here. Now, in our book, we'll show you where this paganism, this beast riding about the sea and being transfigured over in the red dragon and the leather beast, we'll show you how that's done in the 666. And now hold them. See? Which has to come all the way down through the Garden of Eden, from the Garden of Eden on down. Well, now, you think, wouldn't think too much about that. Oh, yes, I'm going back to the bridge. That's why I'm on my way to you now. Yes, indeed, I'm on my way, see. Now, let me see if I can show you now. Look there, but bring out some of it. These are all new things. You see, if we had heard some of this when we was in church, see, I really didn't have much for the crowd to think that right. Now, in a book, so that you can see, I put the glasses on, got a script with me this time. See, in this book, it's entitled, The Vatican. It's by Anne Cunningham, with photographs by David Seymour. It says, in that book, I got everything with the page number on. I'm going to have to get the book, get the page number out of it. It says, the present church, meaning St. Peter's, built in 120 years between 1506, when the architect, B-R-A-M-A-N-T-E, I want you to know who it was, turned in his complete plan and blueprint. And 1626, when it was finally dedicated by Herbert Mahaffey, that's for Herbert, is the largest Christian church in the world. You see that? Now, not the first one had ever given it any thought at all. Now, that temple, Solomon's Temple, as we call it, or that was built up there in Jesus' time, said, destroy this temple, and I'll build it again in 3 days. Isn't that right? And his body, as you have heard me say, him being the seed of Abraham, his body, God, dwells within him. So then Daniel prophesying, said, how long would it be until the sanctuary be saved? And he said, unto 2,300 days. Is that right? And if you don't think that's right, I'll read it. And Daniel over there. See, 91. Now, what we're talking about here deals with uncircumcision and circumcision. It deals with the Jews, and it deals with the Gentiles. You see that now? It deals with this carnal mind, this paper there. You understand? And it, or in other words, deals with paganism, and Satan transformed into an angel of light, the same old devil that was back there in the Garden of Eden. You understand? Same one. Incarnated in a man. Trying to take the place of God and exalting himself on earth. See? And fooling everybody but the elect of God. Now you watch the figure. Now I read it. Just walk with you. Now, it says here that, I read again, the present church, see? It doesn't say, you have to throw that in St. Peter's there. And I'll be back here with these pomegranates and things like that. It isn't on them walls, but I thought it was something that would fit right into that. Then it'll go back into the tree and show you that back is an old tree and how they made the hair in the state. I'm going to put it on the board so you can look at it. See? Now, it was begun to be built in 1506. This is A.D. And it was finished in 1626. Now that's the home figure for it. Now let me show you. Now you take 1626 and then you take 1506 and subtract one from the other. What do you have? You have 120. Is that right? That's 120 years. That's what it says right now on the paper. I read it. And I mean, this is copied out of the book. The present church, built in 120 years between 1606, when the architect, Raymond D., turned in his completed plans and blueprints, and in 1626, when it was finally dedicated by Urban VIII, is the largest Christian church in the world. And I just forgot to get the page number off of which book it on there. See? Now, that's 120 years. Now, they were 120 years building that. See? Just like Noah was 120 years building Noah's ark to save them people over there. They were 120 years building it to lose them. Do you see that now? There's their own figures for it. See? I didn't have nothing to do with it. You can go get the book. You come out of the Los Angeles Public Library. See? Now, do you see that? Now, what's happened? See? Noah built that ark according to the divine specifications in the end of the Antediluvian Age to bring the people from there over into the post-Diluvian. Do you see what I'm talking about? That's under the law. Show you what I mean. See, here's the antediluvian, and here's the diluvian. 1656, north 120 years building the ark there, and this is the flood ship. See? And then this is the pulpit over here. See, now Noah built the ark to bring holy. Now here comes Christ and he. Under this, yeah, to bring the people over here. You see, and so that's for now, the temple. See, and that means that is to say the temple of his body. But Curtis went up there and tore the temple down and moved it over and 120 years in the end of this age, building up something to destroy the lives of the people. Whereas, do you understand? Have you seen through that now? Now, there isn't anybody going to understand and see them things but the seed of Abraham, according to the prophet. Now, let's show you another. Now, you see that? Now, you remember I mentioned here about the 2300 days in the sanctuary would be cleansed. You remember that? All right, let's see how it turned out here. Finished 1626? Don't forget. Well, let's go ahead and get over here and throw them in the box. See? Here, this is 1959. You're just at the city. See, 1959. Is that right? Yeah. Now then, if you take 33 off of it, see, then you have 1926. See? You say all you want to. That is your free will, too. Now, if you take the 1926, or if you want to make 33 and a half, then you do this. he can still have the same thing. If you want to make this 1960, the reason why is because 40 more years will make it up to 2000. Then 33 and a half, they do 34. And we still have the 1926. Why do the 34? A covenant, a new covenant, is not a force until after, or no covenant is a force until after men are dead. A testament is a force after men are dead. Now you see that? So then it was after the crucifixion of Christ that the covenants become of effect on the day of Pentecost. See it right there? Do you see that now? Now, in the picture of 1926, Michelangelo painted in that. All around the wall. Around the wall. God in pictures creating the physical heavens and earth. See? And everybody talks about how beautiful and all Michelangelo's paintings were. Now the temple and all is physical. And them painting the physical creation inside of that. Moving it from Jerusalem, you understand, down and on, and painting the interior of that showed that they were in the old creation and not in the new creation, or not in the real seed of Abraham. That's why if any man wishes to feast on the finality of this thing, well then he shall receive in his forehead and in his hand the mark of the feast that we shall drink for the wine of the wrath, pour out the cup. God's indignation tormented him. Father, day and night. I want to emphasize that day and night. For this reason, why? Because on the other side of the veil, John said there was no night there. Now, if there's no night there, on the other side of the veil, watch this point. The day and night's going on now, isn't that right? Which means right now, day and night. See? They don't have no peace. You understand? And day and night, see? Rolling. Trying to accumulate enough. See? Credit by repetition of the and worship of the Virgin Mary. During their lifetime to get them out of purgatory so they don't have no rest day and night. And they're tormented in the presence of God and of His holy angels. And you are the seed of Abraham, or the angelic body, incarnated in these things. You know, as long as you're in the material, as long as you're in the matter, everybody makes no difference. They're talking. See? And everything that they talk about can say it really both times and they call facts of Catholicism come right out of Catholicism. Or in other words, the Catholicism is the mother of heart. Although that heart is. That's why the 17th chapter of Revelation. Come out of her, my people, that you be not partakers of her shame and receive of her place. That one represents that power was like that, the confusion. And in the confusion of between Protestantism, Catholicism, and other heathen religions, you understand, God is saying to you, the true people of God, come out of my people that you cannot take the person and of their faith. That's the reason why so many of the different churches, as you hear them talk from time to time, they jump up and they say this. Hey,